This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's time for Law and Behold, our ongoing series aimed at improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians, done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. In today's episode, our 31st, there is no specific provision relating to environmental protection in the Federal Constitution of Malaysia. Some have said, though, that it is implicit in Article 5, which guarantees the right to life. And Article 5, Clause 1 states that no person shall be denied of their personal liberty unless the law allows it to be. So taking all of that into account, should the federal constitution be amended to expressly include a right to a clean and healthy environment? So I'm going to discuss this and more with Kew Jia Yao, a practicing lawyer familiar with environmental laws in Malaysia. Welcome, Jia Yao. How are you today?
Hi, I'm very well. Thank you, Juliet.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode. You know, and we're going to be focusing on the environment, you know, considering all these sorts of environmental issues that have been coming, you know, up in the news. And I guess, you know, if we can just start off, can you explain, you know, what Article 5.1 in the Constitution is? You know, what is that all about?
All right. So we're getting right into it right now.
That's right.
So Article 5 of the Federal Constitution, it's under the part which sets out our fundamental liberties, right, of every citizen of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So these are rights that are inherent to each and every one of us, in the sense that it is not given to us by anyone, right? It is inherent to us because we are human beings, right? And so Article 5, Clause 1 specifically says that we have a right to life. Right. No person, it says that specifically, here's what it says. No person shall be deprived of his life or personal liberty, save in accordance with law. So so that's the first declaration of our most basic liberties. So life and personal liberty. All right. So that's what the Constitution says.
And maybe you can explain, you know, the whole part of save in accordance with law. You know, what does that mean exactly?
So that is the context. So maybe we can understand it from the context of the people drafting the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So Constitution was drafted when the country came into being, right? And so there was an important aspect where we were forming the government and the various arms of government, right? So that's the separation of the powers. And the drafters understood that power needs to be separated and not consolidated, because then when power is consolidated, it's easily corrupted to very bad consequences. And so there is this separation where it's balancing the power between the state, which is the government, and individual citizen, right? So Article Clause 5.1 says you can't be deprived of these fundamental liberties except in accordance with law. So now, the law is created by the institution we call parliament, right? So the separation of powers, split powers of government into three important parts, divisions. One is parliament, the other one is the executive, which is the democratically elected executive. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is the judiciary. They are independent of each other. So safe in accordance with law means only parliament can pass laws that restrict our fundamental liberties.
Okay, all right. And, you know, why do we need to push for the right to a clean environment, you know, to actually be recognized as a constitutional right?
Well, it's because the highest law of the land is the federal constitution, mm-hmm. right? So, and one naturally thinks that a clean environment is the most profoundly basic thing that we need in order to exist and to survive, right? You can't survive without clean air. It's only a matter of minutes. You can't survive without clean access to clean water.
That's right.
You can't survive without land that is not contaminated or polluted, right? So it is so fundamental to our livelihoods, our overall well-being for present generations, future generations. So so naturally, people do feel that it should be enshrined in our constitution, this fundamental right to a clean environment, right? So I think that's why people often look to the federal constitution to find whether we have those rights there.
Yes, because it is the law of laws here in Malaysia, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, that's right. But the problem, Juliet, is that the federal constitution does not mention expressly the right to a clean environment.
Mm.
Yeah, and so that has kind of given this contestation, I'm going to say, between the people who suffer from a polluted environment against those who, by carrying out their activities, pollute the environment, right?
Mm.
And so that in this contestation, the victims of pollution, when they turn to the highest law of the land, the Constitution, they don't see something expressly stated there about their right to a clean environment, right? So at best, what is in the federal constitution that we have is Article 5, Clause 1, which is your fundamental right to life and personal liberty. So what people have tried to do is to expand the meaning of that right to life to mean, certainly also means a right to a clean environment, because without a clean environment, there is no life.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. And just looking at our judges, you know, do you think they should breathe more life into Article 5, Clause 1 of the federal constitution?
So, yes, for sure. because the, you know, the federal constitution is it's written, but it's no magic in its own, right? It's not a book of spells. And what you need is really for laws to comply and be aligned with the constitution, for enforcement officers, for judges, for prosecution officers to breathe life into these words in our constitution and in our legislation and rules. So it is indeed, the constitution is but one of the components in the maybe the ecosystem or the framework of the legal system in that sense. So yes, judges have a very, very important role to play when it comes to reading Article 5, Clause 1, for example, and various other legislations, right, touching on the environment. Because, you know, documents, the moment they are written, they die on the paper, right? Because they are no longer flexible, they are written.
Right.
And until you amend them, for which you have to go through a due process, until you amend them, they are what they are. And judges come along with cases, new cases, all the time in front of them with, you know, an endless permutations of those contestations that I talk about. The people whose rights have been encroached upon and the people who carry out activities less responsibly, irresponsibly, such that it troubles and causes worry to other people. So how do judges then, you know, exercise their duties in upholding environmental justice?
That's right. Yeah.
So they have a huge role to play, especially when the science is developing as well, right? Our understanding about how all manner of human activity have impact on the environment, right?
That's right.
Where we did not know before, for example. Right. And things like the kind of things we put into our fridges, the refrigerants, right? And then causing the ozone layer to deplete back then. Things like the usage of DDT and its impact on the ecosystem and various things, right? So as the science evolves, it's really important for the people involved in the upholding of the environmental rule of law to use and to interpret these principles in a dynamic way.
Just going on that, you know, how have our judges interpreted the right to life in relation to the environment?
Okay, it's a bit like the tide, you know, it comes in and then it goes out. So as it is, right, as it is, and that is the nature of judicial interpretation and development of the law based on the cases that come before our courts.
Mm.
So I think let's deal with the question of what do our courts, how do they look at Article 5, Clause 1 of the Constitution?
Mm.
Does the right of to life mean a right to a clean environment? Right. So back in 1996, the Court of Appeal, in a case called Tan Teck Seng, and this has been referred to very frequently, the Court of Appeal back then, which is the second highest court in the country, has held that a wide interpretation should be given to the right of life, right? And should not be read in a restrictive and narrow way to only mean a person's liberty, personal liberty, or his, causing death, right? So life as opposed to death, and without a meaning of a clean environment. So Tan Teck Seng said, no, a wider reading, including a right to a clean environment, should be given to Article 5, Clause 1. So that was a very positive development back then. But subsequently, the highest court in the land, which is the federal court, in Suguma Balakrishnan in 2002, held that no, Tan Teck Seng was not correct, and a narrow and restrictive reading should be given, right, where it only means personal liberty and nothing else. Now, that is the highest, that's the higher court, and it's the federal court, and so that overrides Tan Teck Seng. However, subsequently, we did have another federal court judgment in Sivarasa Rasia against the Malaysian Bar in 2010, mm-hmm. Where another panel of a federal court held that Suguma was decided wrongly. It outrightly rejected that and preferred the Tan Teck Seng interpretation, which means a wider interpretation, including things like right to privacy, and right to a clean environment. So in that sense, we have judicial cases which are in the last 10 years or so, which are quite clearly towards the side of giving the right to life a wider, more liberal interpretation, right? Mm-hmm. So that's as far as cases are, and which is very logical, I think. And in fact, I often want to say, sometimes we really do have to snap out of that very programmatic thinking, mm-hmm. where something so fundamental as the right to clean air, for example, and clean water, even something so obvious in its own, we still have to say, where is it written in the law,
Yeah, exactly.
Because if it's not written, then one doesn't have the right to it.
Then cannot law.
So it's I think we really need to snap out of that kind of programmatic thinking, because that is very, very problematic, and obviously not dynamic, So yes, but the answer is yes, it's positive because the judiciary has been really on the side of a more lively and more humane understanding of the right to life, a more balanced understanding of it. In fact, Juliet, the judiciary has been quite progressive in this area. The head of the judiciary, and that would be the Chief Justice of Malaysia, in several times in the opening of the legal year. That's like the biggest event, that's like the beginning of the every legal year, there'll be a speech, right? And the top judge will give his speech. And so in several of these speeches, in notably 2014-2017, Tun Arifin Zakaria, when he was then the Chief Justice of Malaysia, he has really highlighted the importance of environmental rule of law and recognized that our right to a clean environment is actually a constitutional right. Yeah. Mm. So that's been recognized in his speeches. Of course, the speeches do not amount to case law, but it really shows a very firm attitude and perspective of the court. In an understanding of what sustainable development would mean for a country like Malaysia, or in fact any country.
Yeah,
and so that's a much more mature view. Yeah,
and Malaysian judges, they have interpreted constitutional law as only applicable to the public sphere. Am I correct? And if that's so, how can we make companies liable for violating the right to life when they pollute the environment?
Mm. So the division of that should also be, you know, we should not also approach it in a very programmatic way. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So the companies are private actors, yes. However, they exist in society in a web of relationships, right? So they do not just have narrow relationships with customers and with suppliers, but they involuntarily, there are others who have relationships with them. So, for example, people who live near their factories, right? They have a relationship as well as neighbors. So, and they have to endure the pollution that inevitably come out, emanate from these factories, right? Mm-hmm. So our approach under the Environmental Quality Act, for example, or our the way that we deal with pollution is we do not, as our system of laws and government, we do not say all pollution is prohibited, right? Instead, our approach is you can pollute to a reasonable level, right? This is how we approach it. Mm-hmm. So, and therefore, we have thresholds of acceptable pollution, right? So you can discharge effluents from your factory as long as you filter it up and clean it up to a certain degree, mm-hmm. right? Not an absolute degree, but, you know, as long as it's not too dirty. So you can dirty it a little bit. You can pollute it a little bit, right? But the question is, what if it exceeds, right?
That's right.
And then, and it does, as we are painfully aware, right?
I was so about to say.
Right? We're painfully aware, yeah. And we are affected in various ways when, for example, our water sources are polluted. Mm-hmm. And so these things become a very public problem, right? Although they are the byproducts of very private activities, right? Which is you are just manufacturing clothes for a jeans brand, for example. Mm. So, you know, it's yes, you're going about your own business, but how you go about that has a very public face. And so the restrictions in terms of applying these rights, whether or not we want to call them constitutional rights, or whether we want to call them rights in a law of tort, for example, which is a private aspect of the private law, mm. Is I think the toolkit for the government to hold them accountable and for private citizens who are victims to hold polluters accountable should be as varied as possible, you know, as wide as possible, I think.
And, you know, you were alluding, I'm fairly sure, to the Sungai Gong pollution, you know, and that, of course, which, yeah. Yes, a very painful event. And, you know, that wasn't the only incident of pollution in Malaysia. I mean, we remember what happened in Johor last year,
and
all of these things have made news, but rarely the perpetrators go to court. And why is that?
So why is that, isn't it? I think it's I guess there are many gaps in many parts of the legal framework in this in the ecosystem, and also outside the legal framework. I'll start with, you know, the most popular thing you will hear is we have no enforcement, right? We
That's
have
right.
limited enforcement. So I think what we need is a there is enforcement, but what is the quality and the breadth of the enforcement? Yeah, I think we need to improve on that. And we need to think, again, outside of the very conservative, traditional, programmatic way. For example, right? Let's say, maybe not Sungai Gong, but any river has been polluted by a company, then there should be prosecution, number one, mm-hmm. right? So a prosecution would mean criminal law, holding them accountable. So a criminal prosecution, meaning the state against you, private company and their directors, mm-hmm. to say that you have behaved in a particularly irresponsible way, that is a criminal offense, and we are holding you accountable because you have hurt the state. So then there could be imprisonment, there could be fines. Now, at the same time, the prosecution should also be a civil action by the government against the business and the directors for compensation. So not just on the criminal system, there should also be a civil system case, which is a civil claim for compensation. Yeah, because just now the when you charge them in a criminal court, the money is for is a fine. It's not a compensation.
That's right.
You're not talking about, hey, you know, the implications of what you did. You polluted this river, right? And then and this caused this much problems to us, which the state has to clean up, has to suffer, and all these things. We quantify that and we bill it to you in a civil action. Now, this needs to be done, all right? So from my experience, I do not see this being an SOP. I think this should be an SOP for whenever there is a criminal environmental case, there should also be a claim for compensation initiated by the government. Yeah. So this should be an... Because why? Well, one is... well, we need resources to actually clean up, because otherwise, who pays? It'd be the taxpayers.
That's right.
Right? Inevitably, it often has to be done by the Department of Irrigation and Drainage. You know, which is very unfair, because it just means that businesses can go about doing business at low cost, when the actual cost to restore the environment and to undo the pollution is actually borne by society and borne by the environment, right?
Yeah.
So so someone else is paying for the cost of your business. So if we want to be a healthy and competitive market, then we should actually make businesses pay the actual costs of their businesses, right? So that then we can weed out the poor performing economic players. That equals to a more robust and healthy economy. Now, so I talked about two ways for accountability, which is for the government to pursue, right? One was criminal proceedings. The other one is civil proceedings for compensation. There's one other aspect, which is the actual victims down the river and people who rely on access to clean water, right? So like Sungai Gong, for example. And the victims were how many? I think in the papers, millions of people were affected because of the disruption to water supply.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
And obviously, some were affected more than others, right? People on dialysis support, right?
Yes.
Old folks. So, you know, so they are particularly vulnerable people, obviously, in society to whom, you know, this is very problematic. So they, too... should, in a country which has the rule of law, should have a right to actually go to court to claim compensation against the people who have caused them harm, right? That should be the way in a civilized society, right? Where the way in which someone enjoys the benefit of the environment in an irresponsible way, such that our enjoyment is affected, then we should have the right to go to court to air our contestation, to say that, hey, the way that you're going about your business, right, which is your right, but the way in which you're going about it is infringing on my right to and my well-being, then I should get the court to either stop you and also to ask for compensation. Now, all this will be really important because that affects the bottom line of businesses, right?
That's right.
And when the bottom line is affected, when there is liability, shareholders will have to pay attention, investors will have to pay attention, because very often shareholders are too removed from how businesses are run. Yeah. And when the management run businesses according to the mandate of shareholders and the shareholders' interest is only on the financial bottom line, then we have a problematic way in which, in as far as corporate behavior is concerned, right? Their responsibility to society. So it's quite multiple. It's a multiple angle in which we can make things better, right? From the legal aspect. So the third aspect just now that I mentioned, where the private citizens who are affected should have access to court. That needs to be worked on, because it is actually quite inaccessible, you know, to actually go to court and to claim compensation from these polluters.
That's right. Right? Yeah.
Because the laws are very narrow, and the ability for someone to bring that their story of like how they were affected to court is hard. It filters out a lot of people from the legal system. Yeah. So we need to actually have easier rules of court that would allow environmental proceedings to be brought. Now, efforts are being made on this. We can talk a little bit more about that maybe later in this conversation.
Okay. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, is there a clash between the right to a clean environment and economic rights of the people, you know, such as the right to work, you know? And if so, how do you actually balance that?
Mm. So, yeah. So, yes, these are, you know, these rights do, you know, where do they begin and where do they end, right? Mm. It's a whole basket of rights, right? The right to a livelihood, the freedom to do what you wish in a free society. And then on the other hand, hey, a freedom to enjoy my life and have my well-being. How do you balance that? So the and this is how it should be balanced in a democracy. We should have healthy and accessible forums, i.e. I'm talking about the courts, for people to contest against each other, all right? Because contestation is good, isn't it? Because it just means it's a, in a colorful and pluralistic society where there are all types of us, surely there will be differences and disagreements, right? In, hey, what you are doing over there is affecting me over here, and it's affecting me this way, right? Mm. Now, you know, these kind of things most happen because the person who's doing it is too focused on what he's trying to achieve. He didn't really seek to say, hey, you know, how many people am I going to disturb today? They don't do that, right? They just say like, okay, you know, we are really focused on upping our production and keeping our costs low. Now, when someone is, when the victims of their actions are allowed and facilitated in bringing their grouses and their unhappiness and what they suffer to court, they are allowed to bring their stories out in into public in society and say, hey, you, the way you're doing what you do is affecting me in this way. Mm-hmm. Now, that then becomes a, you know, that story surfaces, right? Because right now, when people can't bring those cases, we all just think, oh, nothing what? No one is suffering, ma, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is fine and hunky-dory and business as usual, right? And so then behavior doesn't change. And also, you know, in a if we try to see it with a bit more, a higher resolution, the directors of the companies, the shareholders in the companies, the employees in the companies, they don't see it. Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't see what happens outside the walls of their factory, right? Because they hide behind maybe some excuses sometimes because of dysfunctional systems. Like, let's say, right, you're a factory and you, as part of your operations, there are particularly polluting waste that comes out, so scheduled waste. And so you are supposed to dispose of them at designated facilities, right, which the government is supposed to provide by way of licensed contractors. Mm. Now, if these licensed contractors don't set up these facilities, or they don't set up these facilities in the places that are convenient to you, such that you, or the facilities are not open, or not open all the time, for example, are not business friendly, such that you have to actually, if you want to if you want to dispose them properly according to the law, then you might have to transport them across three states, for example. Right. Mm-hmm. So then as a businessman, you might say, hey, not my problem anymore. Right. I want to. But hey, so then they have, you know, as that's like one aspect of, you know, I'm just giving an example, and they can then have excuses that help them sleep easier, help them, you know. And so they would say, hey, look, I want to do this. I want to do that. but it's not working, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't blame me, right? So basically what they're saying is I want to blame other people, right, for my bad behavior.
Yeah.
So it's not on me, because then otherwise, I will be out of business because the cost of disposing this waste will be too high, and then I cannot employ these people, right, et cetera, et cetera. So it requires a kind of, you know, I think we need to fix a lot of the dysfunction that happens, you know. So corruption is a big problem. In a sense, not just, you know, bags of money under the table, you know, corruption is also very, you know, often the unwillingness to prosecute, right? The preference to say that, to rely on technical challenges, or to say, oh, no evidence, you know, no action required, to look the other way, to close one eye. So we need to have strong institutions against those. We need to make courts accessible. Public participation is a very, very important part when it comes to protecting the environment. We really need to move beyond you know, decades-old idea that protecting the environment is the government's job. Mm,
that's right.
Because it's not doing a good job, right? Because it takes a lot of resources if... we expect Department of Environment officers everywhere all the time.
Precisely.
Testing everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in today's, you know, Internet of Things kind of era where everyone's got smartphone and everyone's hyper-connected, shouldn't we allow people, you know, more power to engage and participate and give information and share data and access data mm-hmm. that the enforcement's agencies have, you know, to piece things together and to hold people accountable, you know, it is everyone's role to play to ensure that it things work. So that's what I mean earlier when I say, like, we need to move out of that programmatic, very narrow thinking when it comes to enforcing these black letter of the law, you know. We should do more than just charge them in court and then that's it, you know, fine 20,000 ringgit, for example. We should do more in terms of publicizing the prosecution. I do note that the Department of Environment does publish the cases and the outcomes of cases on a monthly basis on their website. But I think a bit more can be done, you know, in terms of to highlight that businesses exist in the fabric of society, that what they do really affects everyone, and show how they affect society and other people, you know, and allow other people to have a voice. So that requires thinking outside of that traditional box, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
So you know, we need to really think outside of that. And that is how I would think. So-called balance, because the balance is not for the government to draw the balance.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's for everyone to have that contestation in a healthy, in a fair place. That's what the courts are for. It's a place to seek justice and equity, right? So, we shouldn't think of like, wow, we got so many court cases. No, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
It just means that everyone has rights, and they have that buy-in where they feel that I go to court, I will get justice, right? And then I can tell my side of the story, right? And I can say that, hey, this wrong has been done to me, and I have confidence that I will be heard, right? So that is actually a dignified existence, you know, and it's part of an ongoing conversation in that sense, you know, from a higher, you know, more big picture perspective.
Yes. And just to conclude, Jayo, should we have the parliamentarians amend the constitution, you know, or should we rely on the judges to expand the right of life to include a clean environment?
I'm counting on both. I think...
Optimistic man.
I think we have no option, no choice but to be optimistic.
This
you
is
know?
True. Yeah.
So I think we need parliamentarians to to recognize that in the reality that we are in, right, where the tendency is to behave in a programmatic way, right, to be thinking within the box, then we should have expressed recognition in our constitution for clean environment, right? Mm-hmm. We should probably at least explore that properly, right? So, I think parliamentarians should explore that seriously because to a lot of people, not having it there is an impediment, right, to many things. Mm. It's just like, you know, having like at the UN level, having like the sustainable development goals, describing, saying these really fundamental, simple as they are. But the fact that it is, you know, declared by the United Nations, it makes a difference. And what it does is it becomes a tool for others, right, to do their work, to push for change, to push the needle towards a little more progress. So yeah, it would be great if parliamentarians can take leadership and make a move for improving the constitution in that sense. Mm. Simultaneously, judges do not need to wait for the constitution to actually spell out clean environment, fresh air and clean water and, you know, protect habitat for our flora and fauna. Mm. Judges do not need to wait for that because these principles are already everywhere in our laws, right? Yeah. Like our biodiversity laws, all the other laws have various wonderful principles in them already. Things like the precautionary principle, things like the polluter should pay principle. These are all written in many of our legislation. So judges really do not need the green light, you know, in that sense, or any further blessing, you know, to actually do what is right and to adjudicate in cases that come before them today, you know, in respect of how one person's right to a clean environment, healthy environment is affected by another person's activity, you know. So judges really do not need to wait, certainly it is encouraging that judiciary has been making progress in this direction, and I think they have been leading change as well, and that's been good, you know. I think the environmental proceedings court rules, they are also working on that. Together with the Malaysian Bar and the Bar Associations in Sabah and Sarawak. So that's also an ongoing effort to make it much easier for public litigants to actually go to court and bring their cases, you know, and test their cases.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Any last message that you'd like to leave us with?
I think... It's really on everyone, and that's everyone. So whether it's parliamentarians or judges or enforcement officers or housewives or businessmen or shareholders, I think it's so trite and simple that we all cannot live for, you know, beyond 3 minutes without a clean environment or healthy environment. Mm. What more, you know, the well-being of our children and our children's children, right? Yeah. So we all have a role to play, and we should just think broader. Yeah, that's what we need to do.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Jiayao, for joining me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Juliet.
I've been speaking to Q Jiayao, a practicing lawyer familiar with environmental laws in Malaysia, about whether the Federal Constitution of Malaysia should be amended to expressly include a right to a clean and healthy environment. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Law and Behold interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.